This is our last class in this session. Welcome, everybody. I'm traveling, but it seems like the arrangements are working fine. And as you know, the retreat in Birmingham, it's not in Birmingham, but near Birmingham in England, starts on Wednesday. So I'll see some of you there, which will be very nice. I was struck today in preparing for this class, sort of reminded of why it is that retreats or intensives in TSK can be really valuable. And I may say something about that as we go along. Okay, so as we've been doing in the last few weeks, I want to set things up so that we can do a practice pretty early in this phone call, and the practice would be the assigned practice, which was TSK exercise 32. So before I do that, I want to start with a little review, a kind of an overview. And I suppose it actually that's a good time to say something about why it is that retreats are helpful. Not that you can't practice TSK without them, but let me say something in the way of an overview. And so often I feel the need to do that, kind of remind ourselves where we are and what we're doing. And so I was wondering, you know, why do I think that that's so valuable? And the reason is that we're being asked to activate this new vision. You know, that's our fundamental theme. And it's presented in a very interesting way in the reading for this week, and the section in When It Rains mentions this. The way it's presented is Rinpoche says that that mindfulness, he defines mindfulness in a very surprising way, really, especially because mindfulness is so much in the air these days. Everybody's talking about mindfulness. Of course, this TSK was written a long time ago now compared to the current mindfulness boom. But he defines it in a way that nobody else would. So within the TSK context, he says mindfulness is appreciation of space and time rather than a minding fixation on conventional things. And having said that, he goes on to say that that kind of mindfulness is essential to preserving the vital fabric of the world. So we'll come back and say some more about that a little bit later on. But right now, I just want to use that description to say something about what it is that we need to keep reminding ourselves of. We need to keep reminding ourselves to come back to the sense that space and time stand at the center. And it's so easy to move away from that. So in this same chapter, the same paragraph, actually, on page 243, Rinpoche says that we have a problem in terms of this mindfulness, in terms of time and space. He says the hypnotic demands made on our attention by ordinary social customs and entertainments and other well-intended, harmless enjoyments, which keep us tuned in a constant and limiting way. They're physically and psychically destructive. And in addition to this emphasis on entertainments and ordinary customs, I think we could also mention, he doesn't hear really, but the kind of stresses and strains of daily life. You know, the world tugs at us. The world is always pulling us back into its sphere, its domain. It's always saying, this is the way things are. And it takes a kind of determination to to look at our experience in the light of the TSK vision instead. Now, the fact that the when we do look in terms of TSK, when we do connect back in, as he says, to the vitality of our experience, or the, what does he say here, the vital fabric of our world, it's intrinsically really rewarding. And so you would think that would be enough. You'd say, well, this is so much better way to be. But I think we all know, and we've talked about it before, that surprisingly, that's not enough. Surprisingly, we just settle back into our ordinary knowledge, our ordinary understanding. And so I think that's really why it seems to me important to keep coming back to remind ourselves what's going on, to remind ourselves what it is we're actually doing. And it's also important, that's why it seems to me that retreats or intensives can be so valuable, because when everybody's focused in the same direction, then that hypnotic power of the ordinary to take us over is a little easier to resist. Now, over time, you know, and many of you have been studying TSK for many years now, and over time, it has its way of working its way into awareness and really having a fundamentally transforming effect. So it's not essential to do it any one way, but it is good to remind ourselves of what it is that we're doing. So let's talk about that for a minute, and then we'll start preparing for the exercise. There's a couple of things that are closely related to each other, it seems to me, that have to do with space and with knowledge, and then I'll talk about time in a moment. So with regard to space, when we talk in terms of activating the TSK vision, we're talking about the openness of space. Space, things show up in space, and ordinarily we involve ourselves completely with the things that show up in space. But space itself is not what shows up in space. It's never just the content of what we experience. It's more the fact that anything can appear, and really you could say the marvel that anything does appear. And then what we've been looking at in these last few sessions is the field within which appearance arises, or space as a field, which is the way to begin to challenge our usual focus on specifics, on the things that appear. Now, with knowledge, very much the same is true. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm traveling, in addition to the TSK retreat, is that I have been attending a conference in Vienna, which is where I am now. The conference ended yesterday. And so there were a lot of papers in this conference on various themes in Buddhism. And one of the papers that I attended was about a certain element in Tibetan thought. We don't need to go into the details. But it made me think of this session that we're having right now, because it talks about the complete openness of space and the complete radiance of knowledge. And those themes, which are present in certain aspects of Tibetan Buddhist thought, are really also the themes that get expressed here in TSK. So space is this openness, but knowledge is, at least one way to talk about it, is the illuminating dimension of experience. And those two things are very closely related to each other. So we're working with those, and right now we're in the knowledge dimension. And then with respect to time, we'll be looking at time when we start up again in September. I personally have always had a little more difficulty. I mean, it's great to practice with time and with that dimension of the vision. But the dimension of it, you know, how that integrates, I think it's become more clear as we've done the last few months now what the relationship is. But for our purposes right now, I think we could just say that time is the dynamic aliveness that through which the openness of space and the radiance of knowledge come together, the happening of that arising. That's one way to think about time. So if you put all those together, you could say, well, when we activate the vision, there is a complete openness, there is this radiance of being, and there is the vitality, the aliveness of time. And those are, of course, ways that the TSK vision repeatedly talks about time and space and knowledge. That's what we're working with. And those particular ways of discussing it are related to, you might say, the third level. They're related to where we're headed. What we're doing right now is what we have been doing for the last few months is exploring the second level at which we begin to undo our commitment to things and objects and all the elements that are frozen, which is the image that's used a lot in this reading, to undo or thaw out the frozen dimension or question the specific identities that show up, all of those ways of talking about it. So that's a kind of an overview, a reminder. So with that in mind, let's start taking a look at exercise 32, which we will do now for a few minutes, but I want to say a couple of things about it first. So exercise 32 is called a unifying clarity, right? And it's this exercise, and of course it was the assigned exercise, so I'm going to assume that everybody's, you know, basically familiar with it. It's called a unifying clarity, and I like the idea of unification there. Whatever appears, again, it's like talking about space as a field. In terms of knowledge, whatever appears, there is this quality of luminosity, which is a way of describing the quality of awareness of being here, being present. When I was preparing for class, I remembered a phrase from a play by Shakespeare, Othello, where at the end of the play, Othello is getting ready to kill Desdemona, and he's carrying a torch, and so he has to extinguish the torch to surprise her, and he says, "Put out the light, and then put out the light." And he's referring, of course, to killing her. And that's just it. As long as we're alive, there is a kind of a luminous radiance to our being, and that is intimately connected with our capacity for knowledge. As it says in this exercise, that knowing light, I'm quoting here at the bottom of 271, that knowing light touches everything in a subtly intimate way. That is, there is nothing in our experience that is not touched by the light of awareness, because if the light of awareness is not active and available, then it's not in our experience. It's kind of a truism. So it's interesting that in the exercise, we start with light as an object. That is, we visualize a very clear light, and then you know how the exercise goes. You let that expand out into five lights, and then each one of those expands out into five lights. I'm not going to focus so much on that part of it, in fact, hardly at all. But the point I want to make is that we start off with light as an object. But of course, that's not really the nature of this luminosity, this clarity. It's not the object at all. We can't really say that it's the subject, because that's already way too committed to our ordinary way of seeing, but it does seem fair to say that it's more connected to the subject. Because in our ordinary understanding, in the way we freeze the dynamic of time and space, we freeze it into the subject as the knower, and the objective realm is what's known. So the knowing dimension, of course, is connected to the subject. And that is the starting point for us. And so the very first step is light as an object, because that's how we understand the world. And we kind of get the idea that, that things can be bright. You look at the sun and it's luminous, right? But immediately in this exercise, you start off with that sense that light is the object, but you add to it at the very beginning, the first sentence of the instructions for the exercise, it adds to that light a knowing quality. So that, of course, is what we're interested in. The light is a way of, how could you say it, manifesting, making almost tangible, or at least we could say making real, the capacity for knowing, the awareness. The light does that. You know, it's I mean, it's a lot easier, I think, to get the sense of this in doing the exercise than in talking about it. It's not so important to be able to see a light clearly or see five lights clearly in front of you and then have those split up so that you've got 25 lights, I guess, and then behind you and so on. That may be useful. And for some people, that's a really good way to get into the exercise. But, you know, we don't, there's not much, I don't want to say it in a negative way, but that's all on the level of light as an object of awareness. And we're interested in the knowing dimension in the light, because that's where the knowing emerges. So the light that's presented here is all in terms of a light that has a knowing dimension. And then it is important, it seems to me, that the instruction, the exercise invites us to add lights not only in front of us, but behind us and to each side, and let it expand out in that way. And the reason that seems so important, actually it says above and below also, so the reason that seems so important to me is that's real clear, really. When we see something in front of us, we are making it an object, and we're reinforcing the idea or the understanding that we are the knowing, the ones who have the knowing capacity. When we let that knowing quality appear behind us and above us and below us, we have to give up our usual model. You know, we can't see behind us, and so the old model begins to break down. And so at that point, we can really start to imagine, or imagine is not a strong enough word, we can really allow this knowing quality to be independent of our usual model of the self as the knower. So that's the basic exercise. Now, I really want to emphasize the second part of the exercise, part B, where it brings space and knowledge into relationship with each other. It says, you know, it kind of refers back to all of the exercises we've been doing throughout the program that have to do with space and time. And it says, through performing these exercises, you may come, and I'm reading now, you may come to have some understanding of a different kind of space. This space is involved in all situations. It accommodates the presenting of all things. It undermines all sense of locatedness and directedness. And that, of course, has to do with the self as the one that is located in a particular space, place, and directing its knowing outward. So we're just going to jump right into that level. And it says in the instructions, it says you do the exercise in that way, but without worrying too much, or it says with no regard to your physical locatedness, your outward orientedness, and so on. And in saying, clarifying what that's about, it says, so the light's going to be more subtle. It's going to emerge naturally from the openness of space. Right? And it links that light to the dynamism of time. So there's one place where we begin to see time coming into it too. The light in being luminous is also dynamic and alive and has that temporal dimension. Okay, I think I've probably said enough about the exercise. It does suggest that you can just let that light expand so that nothing is left out. The very end of the exercise says, use that light. Now, use doesn't mean that, you know, I use the light, because that would throw us back into a knower known structure, but that's how the language is here. Use that light to expand and encompass everything so that neither subject nor object, physical nor emotional aspects remain. So that's what I have to say about the exercise. I think it's, you know, if you've been doing it, I think most of that is clear anyway. So let's try to do that practice and see, in light of this broader picture that I tried to lay out in the beginning, just reminding us what's involved in activating the TSK vision, let's see where doing this exercise leads us in that regard. So we'll give ourselves about 5 minutes for the exercise, okay? Let's get started. Okay, well, let's get back together. I switched my view, excuse me. Okay, now I'm back. Here's an opportunity to share with us some things about your experience. And we do have a couple of people already. So David says, developed a sensation of floating, not being anchored by my usual sense of touch. That's interesting. You point toward touch. In my case, my natural tendency would be to go, I think, toward my usual sense of seeing, of being the one who sees. But it's great to work with the other senses, of course. Not being anchored by my usual sense of touch, distant sounds, expanded my space as well. Felt very much like the generating space exercises where overlapping sense fields expand awareness. Not much thinking going on, aware of being aware. Okay, that's very nice, and I don't have any special comment about that. You might think about this exercise in terms of the different spaces, that is to say, the different senses. We think of light, of course, initially as connected to seeing. And this is one place where I think the physical analogy, I mean, physical light is a kind of analogy to the light of awareness or the clarity of knowing. But this is one place where I think the analogy is very useful. And maybe goes beyond analogy. Because when you think about what it's like to see something, all that we ever see is light, right? And so I'm kind of drawing on our ordinary knowledge that we have through science, which is that when we see something, what we're seeing is the light that is reflected back off the object that we're seeing. So all we ever see is light. So the sense of seeing, it's very natural to move toward light there. But certainly there is nothing that restricts our experience to one sense modality. And that's what David, I think, is pointing out here. And it may well be that as we get into overlapping sense fields, as David wrote, the kind of positioning that would keep us from really engaging this unifying clarity drops away. That's a good way to work. So John says, at a certain point, the primacy of light transcended the world order, and all things, including myself, had the substrate of light. Space was highly intimate, and everything had a lightness in both senses of the word. Was the logos functioning at this point? It didn't seem so. Okay, well, that's very nice. I'm always delighted, you know, that people in doing these exercises, they're very powerful, and people have different experiences. And sometimes, you know, you do the exercise and you say, well, I didn't have everything, you know. I didn't have the primacy of light transcend the world order. That's okay. You know, the nature of your experience is your experience. And within that experience, even in its most ordinary manifestations, the same qualities are available. But it's very helpful, I think, when we have a sense of different possibilities that emerge. So, okay. Michael writes, the surrounding luminosity radiated. Oops, I'm missing one in here, it seems like. Oh, I see. I lost it a little bit. The surrounding luminosity radiated outward. Sorry, radiated inward. Okay, the surrounding luminosity radiated inward. So it's good to get a sense of that because ordinarily we have the sense that our ability to know radiates outward. But here he's saying the surrounding luminosity radiates inward, where I felt my location to be. Then when the radiance became a globe, so this is when you're expanding out around you, I think, I could feel myself melt into it and be part of the radiating outward. Okay, that seems to me a very nice way of expressing what the exercise and its closing instructions ask us to do, so that neither, it says, neither subject nor object, physical nor emotional aspects remain. Don't try to expand outward. Just use only the encompassing medium of the light itself. That seems close to what you're describing here, Michael. So it's just, you know, I mean, I'm very delighted. I think I've used that word already, but I'll use it again. It delights me. And I used it without a sense of the play on words, excuse me. But now that I notice it, I will call attention to it. So it delights me that the people move naturally into a kind of appreciation for the transforming power of light, because that's really what we're looking at here. Okay. So Sudhi says, could not help it, but connected to the lights of the bardo. I know, Sudhi's trying hard not to be a Tibetan Buddhist, but what can we do? Okay. Could not help it, but connected to the lights of the bardo of dying and the lights separating as deities in some of the practices of Poa, connecting the lights that the eye sees comes from inner light. Okay, well, I think we had some discussion a little while ago, or if we didn't, it was something I was thinking about. A reminder that Rinpoche does, you know, he says, no, TSK is not Buddhism, that's fine, but he does say that it can be helpful for Buddhists. It can help illuminate or clarify, and those, again, are words related to light. It can help illuminate or clarify the way that some of the teachings are presented. And you know, it could also help illuminate, presumably, in other religious traditions, but we don't have people who are so committed to those kinds of other traditions. So we can work with Buddhism. That's fine. And I did mention I have just been at this conference with Buddhist scholars, and I found that even in some of the very philosophical papers, I couldn't help it. I kept thinking about how some of the puzzles that they were trying to work out could really be clarified in terms of the TSK vision. So yeah. Tibetan Buddhist imagery especially is particularly rich in its appreciation of light as a capacity for knowing. Okay, Philip says, sense of just merging with, returning to, being universal, infinite milk of awareness. Milk is interesting. So milk is also, well, okay, I'm not going to try to comment on it anymore. I'll just leave that. That's good. Eliana says, it seems to me that space and knowledge, or openness and light, are so connected that we can only expand them together. Well, that may be. I said at the start of our conversation today that space and knowledge are very closely connected, and perhaps they're intimately connected, you know, so much so that they emerge together, as you're saying, Eliana. After all, space and time and knowledge are dimensions of being, facets of being, and there are reasons for, there's a power that comes, let's say, from working with them separately, but in the end, they're going to come together. That just seems right to me. Bruce says, the experience was different from recent ones with this exercise. Usually, it's surprisingly easy to add a knowing quality to the light, but this time it took a moment till I saw my own body or space seemed like a knowing light itself. I think the whole question of how the light of awareness, let's call it, how that's related to our embodiment. That's just a wonderful question. You're finding a way into that here, Bruce. I saw my own body or space seemed like a knowing light itself. Then I allowed this to be expressed by the light in front of me as well. There was a tactile sense of being touched and known by the stars' light. Okay, so you're bringing in the imagery of stars, which I think would work very well. I added multiple stars all around and felt an intensification of the light, which seemed more to want to flow in to the black hole of my space than to expand out. So interesting then that you find yourself, one way of relating to the body is that that's where the light isn't. But of course the light is there too. But I think that's what you're pointing to when you say the black hole of my space. Okay. The sense was the same. Intensification, time, and illumination coincided. And subject, object, and gap between all were luminous gestures or expressions that merged. And there was only this brilliant implosion of knowingness. Okay, well, that's great. People have such wonderful ways of expressing their experience. All of you, that's... I don't have anything to add to that. It's very good. Okay. So, in a way, the exercise, this exercise that we've been working with, points beyond the second level that we're interested in right now. I don't know if beyond is the right word, but the knowingness of great knowledge, let's say, that's where this exercise leads us. And the reading that we did is more concerned at the outset, and actually the reading as a whole is more concerned with the transition that would take us from our ordinary frozen understanding to a more open, dynamic, live understanding. And we've been looking for the last 6 weeks at how that manifests in the logos, and how one possible way of moving out of our usual frozen understanding is to move, as we discussed in an earlier session, to know with the knowing of the logos. When we talk about the clarity of light, the unifying clarity of light, we're already at a level, you might say that's sort of the thawing quality, right? It's like, if you imagine something frozen, and then you have a light, which, in our usual way of thinking, the light also has a heat to it. It wouldn't have to, but that begins to thaw things out. So the dimension of light that we're looking at here is a way into this deeper aliveness, this greater awareness. But the reading itself is exploring on a little different level, and I want to take the time remaining to us, I think, to go into that, because I think there's some really interesting things that are said in the reading. So the starting point of our reading, it was a short reading this week, but the starting point was this image that everything is frozen. Let me get back to that for a moment here. If we take a look just on page 242, that's where that comes up. Let's see. Because I'm traveling, I don't have quite the usual setup, so I have to make it work a little differently. Okay. This distinction, a very helpful distinction, but we've talked about it before, so I'm not going to say anything about it now. The distinction between ordinary knowing and ordinary knowledge, I guess, and lower knowledge, with lower knowledge being kind of the whole of that within which ordinary knowledge of the things to be known shows up. Okay, well, that lower knowledge, that state that we find ourselves in, the sort of manifestation of the logos, you might say, is frozen. That's the quality of it. We keep freezing reality. And I just want to take a moment to point out that that's going to be true even if we feel that, you know, that the part of experience that we're in touch with has a flowing dimension. It varies somewhat. You know, if you say, I see the lamp, I see the table, that's frozen, right? There's objects there. But suppose you're doing a Cognier exercise, some sort of movement exercise, and you say, well, there's this feeling that's flowing through my experience. And you say, well, gee, that's not so frozen. No, it's not so frozen, but there's a whole lot that you're still presupposing, which does represent a kind of frozen identification. You know? There's the one that's experiencing the flow. There's the location. There's the time that it's happening. There are all these structures. And that goes back to the notion that the logos is fundamental and so fundamental that, you know, we're not really aware of its manifestations. It's just what is shaping everything that's happening. So that frozen quality is there. Because the logos is so all pervasive, it goes back to the point I was talking about at the beginning. It's not so easy to thaw it out, you know, and many, we can kind of trick ourselves into thinking that we're having an experience that has moved beyond the logos, but in fact we're still accepting fundamental structures. And you know, that's not grounds for feeling negative or hopeless or anything like that. But it is grounds for reminding ourselves that this is a project that unfolds over time. And you know, on the one hand, it's just great that people can do these exercises and really just so easily, often, not always, but so easily move beyond the ordinary structures. At the same time, or on the other hand, there is a fundamental commitment that we continue to make. I see that Klaus has a comment here. That's right. So Klaus says, in Cognier, Rinpoche is also talking about a third level of Cognier where there's only pure energy. That actually brings me to a point that I want to make sure to discuss, and since we're almost out of time, that's really good. The way that Rinpoche talks here, you might conclude, you know, that unless you are in touch with space and time, you can't really engage the vitality of being alive. I mean, that is how Rinpoche describes it. Does that mean then that TSK has some special patent on awareness, you know, that you have to move, have to develop your understanding in terms of time and space? And I think the answer is no, you don't. There are other ways you can do it. And Rinpoche gives some examples, it's actually at the bottom of page 245. Let's look at that, and then Michael has a comment, and we'll end with that. So on 245, Rinpoche says, after the break in the middle of 245, he says, we can criticize ordinary knowledge or lower knowledge. Here he's saying lower knowledge. We can criticize lower knowledge and see that there's a natural continuum linking lower knowledge and higher knowledge. And he says we can do that in various ways, and he gives examples at the bottom of 245, heartfelt convictions, lessons from history, logical analyses, right? all of those, the image he uses here, he says, those all lay out roads before us that knowingness can walk on. In other words, there are different ways of knowing. And I think Kunye, so I'm going to come back now, Klaus, to what you say, is a great example. If you can develop the kind of richer dimensions, maybe the third level, as you say here, of Kunye, that can readily lead you. And there are many other ways too, into a deeper kind of knowingness. What the TSK vision does is it gives us a way to, I don't have a good way of saying it. It helps us understand what's going on. It's not just that sometimes we have these remarkable experiences, and maybe we don't exactly know what to do with them, except, you know, continue to practice in whatever way we have, and see if that happens again. TSK underlies that, or TSK gives us a way of thinking about what's going on when we have those kinds of experiences. As it says, actually, it says on page 247, he's talking still about these different ways of knowing. He's calling them disciplines here. And he says, great knowledge, it's at the very end of the chapter, I think. No, I'm sorry. It's at the very end of page 247, though. He says, thinking in such disciplines as cosmology, metaphysics, or theology, so these are other possibilities, right, is not ordinary. It doesn't have to be ordinary, let's say. Great knowledge can give these disciplines a new foundation, a new range, a transcendent range. And that's part of what the TSK vision offers. And so you could say the same thing with regard to Kunye. You could say the same thing with regard to meditation. Wherever you turn, this further dimension of our being is available through the vision. Doesn't mean that it's not available otherwise, but now that we have there's a kind of underlying insight that's available to us, and we say, oh, I see, I understand. Okay, so let's take a look at Michael's question. Is it possible to have knowledge of our society, its nature, mistakes, potential, flow into our awareness by welcoming the logos? Or is the benefit of sensing the logos less detailed than that? Can we only open to knowledge itself, not its presence in the logos? Well, that's a great question, and I think it's a very nice way to end, because I think the answer is yes, to part A and to part B. I don't think they're really contradictory. So part A is, can we develop a greater knowledge of our society, or let's just say of our world, of what it is that we ordinarily interact with, by welcoming the logos? And I think the answer to that is yes. That's what's involved in knowing with the knowledge of the logos. We're engaged in the world without losing contact without losing contact with the deeper knowing that informs the logos. That's what knowing with the knowing of the logos is about. And then your second part is, or is the benefit of sensing the logos less detailed than that? Can we only open to knowledge itself, not its presence in the logos? So I don't think that distinction is the right way to engage this. When we open to knowledge itself, we are opening to its presence in the logos. Now, what about the clarity, the unifying clarity that we were looking at in the exercise, which doesn't seem to so much engage the logos? Right, we can do it that way. We don't have to move through the logos. But the logos in itself can open into the immediacy and the sort of universal and unifying availability of knowledge. And that's not a restriction. That's not a limitation. Okay, so let's end there. Thank you very much. We're going to do a break now. September 14th is when we start again. So I think that's 3 weeks. That must be 3 weeks from today. Since I'm still traveling, I probably won't post the readings until, not sure. Maybe a week from now. Maybe it'll take me a little longer. But you already have the basic foundation, of course, because we're moving on with the next unit of When It Rains. So thank you very much, everybody. Thanks for all your wonderful comments and contributions. No, that's what I'm saying. I haven't posted it yet, and I probably won't post it for a little while. But if you go ahead and do all the readings in the next unit of When It Rains, you won't be wrong. You'll just be doing more than you might have to. Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.